The devil comes against our body. The lust of the flesh. All full. Outward. Outside us. Against the spirit, the temptation of pride, lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. All three, these are the only three avenues through which the devil approaches us. But that's enough. Because that's all of us, isn't it? He will approach you from any angle he can find a crack. It's like our effort in the war. We might say that we have the Air Corps, we have the Navy, and we have the Army. They didn't do the same thing, did they? I never did see a tank fly over and drop a bomb. But I saw airplanes fly over and drop a bomb. And drop men and drop supplies. They had different jobs. And the devil uses these different parts of us to approach us. Each are different in their attack. Each are different in the way they approach us. So our defenses must be different. And we're going to look at that in a moment. But I want to emphasize now that just because you might be very free from the lust of the flesh, maybe you can control your body. Maybe you can have perfect control of it. Paul said some men have that gift and others don't have that gift. Some women have that gift, but other women don't have. Your defense is not the same for that as it is for other things that might tempt you, like the things you see around you against your soul, the lust of the eyes. What do you see in the world that draws you to the world rather than to Jesus? And last of all, this swells up inside us, the pride of life. This is an attitude toward ourselves and toward God, isn't it? So there are different modes of attack, there are different modes of defense. And there are divinely appointed methods to defend ourselves against these. And we're going to look at those. One time there was a woman who applied to a church to become a member of that church. Everybody knew her reputation. One lady said she danced, she drank, she smoked, and she used too much makeup. She's worldly. No, she's not worldly, she's carnal. You're worldly, the minister said to the second lady. You're worldly. All she does is in the realm of the flesh. You're worldly because you wish power. You love display. You want to be the head. You delight in show and position. You're worldly. She's carnal. Remember in Luke 7, 37 through 39, if you look there, Simon was entertaining Jesus. And Jesus, this woman came in and washed his feet with the hairs of her head. Washed his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head because she appreciated what he was able to do for her and would do for her, even though she was probably a prostitute and had seven devils. That means she was completely taken over by the devil. She recognized in Jesus that he could do something for her. the Pharisees which had bidden him saw it, he spake within himself. Now, do you find yourself doing this? I despise this story. I despise Simon's attitude. I can't stand him. And I can't stand me when I have the same attitude. When I appear to be self-righteous, as if there's nothing wrong with me, that all the wrong is in the other guy. I'm a Simon, aren't I? You remember what Jesus said to him? This man, he says, if he were a prophet, knows what kind of woman this is. And she touches him, and she's a sinner. Jesus said to Simon, I got a little story to tell you about two debtors. One owed a little piddling sum, and one owed a great big debt. But he forgave both of them. Now, a Jew wasn't any slob at mathematics, as you know. If you know any Jews, you know that they're very well versed in how to handle money and how to make it. And he was no exception. He passed the arithmetic test right quick. Jesus said, which one of them's going to love his creditor the most? The one that had the big debt or the little one? And of course he said, well, I suppose the one to whom he forgave the most. Then Jesus turned to him and said, when I came into your house, you didn't give me a kiss. You didn't wash my feet. You didn't anoint my head with oil. But this woman, since the time she's come in, has not failed to do that. Because she had much to be forgiven, she loved much. And he could have said, Simon, go and do thou likewise. You see, Simon was one of those. Which was he, do you think? Was he suffering from a lust of the flesh? Did he wish the woman was showing him the attention instead of Jesus? I think I've observed people who criticize others for a display of affection, and they say they're trying to get fresh with somebody when they merely want to greet them with warmth, with love. And they say it doesn't look good. In whose eyes doesn't it look good? In your eyes or in God's eyes? Was he suffering from something outside him? Did he stand to gain by this woman's coming into his house? Oh no, he stands to lose, didn't he? He might have been thinking of his pocketbook, do you suppose? This woman being seen in my house with my reputation, I can just see it going down the drain, can't you? Or did he have something about his pride that was hurting him? I don't want to be seen with a woman like that. Because think what my friends will say. One time I went to call on a woman who lived in a district in Indianapolis that was a little bit shady. As a matter of fact, it was more than shady. And my brother cautioned me, be careful, because you never know what's going to happen in a place like that. Well, I'd been in the army. I'd been propositioned by women before. I remembered what God said through Joseph. How can I break this trust of my master? I'd been able to do that before, and I said a little prayer as I went to that place, but I wasn't afraid. Was it the lust of the flesh, the lust of the spirit, or the pride of life that prompted Simon to say what he did? First of all, let's look at the lust of the flesh, shall we? We're going to examine each one of these a little bit more in particular. I believe when he says the lust of the flesh, he's talking about in a metaphorical sense. It's not this soft substance you feel, your fingers. You feel the flesh on your leg, or you feel the flesh on your face. He's not talking about that. It's not the thing that covers the bones that's penetrated with blood he's talking about, because that's pure and clean. It came to us that way. God created man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and he became a living soul. And God said, that's very good. David said, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. He's not talking about the flesh as we call flesh. There is nothing involved in anything in connection with the human body itself that is sinful. The human body itself is without sin. It's how we use it that makes it sinful. The body isn't sinful. If you sin, don't hate your body because you sinned. Hate your head because you let it sin. We heard about control just a moment ago, how the Holy Spirit controlled the early disciples and where they went and how they went and to whom they went. That's why God gave me a head, was to control this body. I know some people who don't have any brain. They're lying up here at the state hospital in beds. One time I visited them. I visited the state hospital and saw one little boy I remember in particular who had a head this big around, a hydrocephalic, if you don't know the name of it, means much water on the brain. The passageway to his spinal cord had been stopped, and all the water that accumulated in his body was still in his head, all that accumulated there. And his head was this big around. He had no brain, he couldn't think. All he could do is lie there in the bed and let the flies crawl in and out of his mouth. It about made me sick at my stomach. I don't want to be like him, but sometimes I am. Sometimes I don't have any more brains than that little boy did. At least I don't show the evidence of having one. The lust of the flesh. Do you believe that your body is pure and clean? Or are you ashamed of parts of your body? The Lord asks us to cover up parts of our body because we stir up the lust in other people. This is why you ladies ought to watch your skirt line, because you stir up us normal men. This is why you ought to watch your plunging necklines, because you stir up us men. This is why you men ought not to go bare down to your waist. It isn't any more modest than it is for a woman to go bare down to her waist. Because you stir up a lust of the flesh in his head, not in his body, in his head. It goes to his body, but it's in his head first, isn't it? Let me demonstrate. David, the night he should have been out leading his troops in battle, was home taking a bath or walking around on his upstairs porch. Apparently he didn't have tranquilizers to put him to sleep like we do. So he was taking a walk. He looked over and saw Bathsheba bathing herself. A normal reaction to Bathsheba was that he desired to have her for himself. If he had just had the thought and stopped it there, he would have had no problem. His flesh didn't make him go there. His head made him go there and bring her to him and commit adultery. If David had been minding his own business, he would have never gotten in trouble. Secondly, if he had let his head rule his body, he would have never gotten in trouble. His body didn't make him commit adultery. His head made him commit adultery. He used his body to sin, didn't he? But the thought was there first. Listen to the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 6:18 when he talks about this very subject. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body. What does he mean? The body doesn't make you do it. You know, when Eve explained to God why she partook of the fruit, what made her hand go out there and get the fruit? You know, if my head didn't tell my hand to move, I couldn't even move that arm. Sometimes I can't move it anyway, but that's beside the point. If my head didn't tell me to do it, it wouldn't be done, would it? But Eve said, I was deceived, I was beguiled by the devil. The devil made me do it. No, the devil didn't make her do it. Her head made her do it. So here Paul said, every sin that a man doeth is without the body. The body doesn't make you do anything. But he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. You see, I'm using my head to destroy myself. To destroy my body, which is clean and pure and holy. All parts of it are clean and pure and holy if I'm a Christian. But my head causes my body to work against my body. So he says, with his own body, the thought behind it was his body, and the desire he had behind the thought was his body. So Paul says, in matters of the flesh, and this just goes against our grain, we just cannot deal with this. We have been told all our lives, whenever you see an enemy, stand up against him. Stand up and fight. Haven't we? When we were a little boy, we came home with our nose bloodied. What did Mother and Dad do? If they were smart, they said, the next time you meet that guy, be ready for him. Be able to defend yourself. Aren't we taught that from childhood? Surely we don't tell our children, if somebody smacks you in the nose, just let him smack you in the nose again. You say, well, that's what Jesus said. They slap you on one cheek, well, let them slap you on the other. He's talking about adults. He's not talking about children. You learn to do that because that disarms him when you're an adult, but not when you're a child. We are constantly taught to defend ourselves, aren't we? But here is one case where it's best to run away and be a coward than to stay and be a dead warrior. You know, in battle, we are told sometimes it's better to withdraw than it is to go ahead when you know the enemy force is 10-1 in their favor. You are smarter to withdraw to a better position and stand there than to stand and fight and insist on it being done right where you are. I've already referred to Joseph, and I think he's a perfect example of the very thing we're talking about. You and I simply don't have the intelligence nor the control by ourselves to stand up to the lust of the flesh. The best thing you can do when you see it is run as fast as your little legs can carry you and leave everything behind you. I'm speaking especially to the young people, but old people are affected this way too. Do you know just because there's, what do they say? Because there's snow on the roof is no sign the fire's out in the hearth. All of you old people know what I mean by that, and I think most of you young people know what I mean by that. You don't lose the lust of the flesh just because you're 60 years old, 70 years old, 80 years old. It's been proven. Some of us think we pass a magic age somewhere that we'll never be tempted after we get to be 55. Baloney. That's the devil telling you that. And you're fair game for him. Joseph went into Potiphar's house. He had full range of his house, second only to him only in the throne. In other words, he could go anywhere he wanted to in Potiphar's house, and he did, because his business demanded it. But Potiphar's wife was a scheming woman. She was a normal woman. She had normal drives. Maybe she had more than normal drives. You've encountered these kinds of women. They're sitting right out there. Do you know that some of you have more than normal sex drive? And some of you have very little sex drive? And some of you are what is called normal? It's like statistics. You know, they say you can prove anything by statistics. Put your feet in the oven, your head in the ice box, and you're normal in between. What's normal? But Paul knew that some men had a great gift of control of their bodies, and some men didn't. Paul knew that some had a great gift of other things, and some didn't. But we don't know it. We ought to know it, because we're one of them. It's like the little comic strip that said, "We have met the enemy, and they is us." The enemy is us, you and me in this case. So you know what happened in the case of Joseph. This woman was so desperate. I don't know where her husband was all this time. He's probably like some of the husbands are today. Their wives could be to the point of desperation. Their wives could be hungry for affection to the point that they cry at night. Alone. But their husbands don't know it, because they don't live with them according to knowledge. Whatever their husbands wants, that's satisfied. But it doesn't make any difference what the wife wants. She can wait. I imagine that was Potiphar. I cannot imagine the queen of Egypt wanting to lie with a slave if she had a husband that was worth 2 cents. Anyway, you know that Joseph fled out of the house when she propositioned him to come and lie with her. He was smart. Romans, the 7th chapter and the 18th verse. You would do well to do the same. When you see something developing between you and the opposite sex, or anything else that concerns the flesh, concerns your body and how it's being used, you would do well to use your head to make your feet go as fast as they could go out of there. Depart yourself from the situation, cut it off, and cut it off but good. Even if you land in jail like Joseph did, at least you'll have your self-respect and you won't have hurt somebody else. That's why God says, get out of there, flee. Romans 7:18, I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. I want you to notice that within me dwelleth no good thing. It isn't my body that has the problem. It's what's inside my head that has the problem. For to will, that is in my mind, is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. The New International Version says this a lot plainer, and I like this better, I think. I know that nothing good lives in me. That is, in my sinful nature. Have you ever thought about how you obtained your ideas about what was wrong and what was right about your body? Did it come naturally? Did you just automatically, when you were born, have it in your computer? This is right and that's wrong. This is right and that's wrong. No, your mother and your dad put that in there, didn't they? Your aunt and your uncle, grandpa and grandma, and everybody at church, everybody in the world, everywhere you go, had input into that. And you arrived at your own conclusion, what you wanted to put into your body. what kind of an idea you want to put into your head. Some people put beer in their belly so they can forget their problems, because they've seen other people put beer in their belly to forget their problems. Some people would not be found in some costumes I've seen some of you in. I wonder if you ever think, when we wear things that expose more than we need to expose, what we would do if we met Jesus on the way and he looked me up and down. Would I be embarrassed? Or would I be happy I met him? Paul says, I know that nothing good lives in me, that is in my sinful nature, for I have a desire to do what's good, but I can't carry it out. In my inner being, I delight in God's law, but I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind. I want to know how many here have a war going on in your body right now. Is there anybody who doesn't? I want to see your hand. I think we've got a pretty good handle on this, haven't we? You know there's one going in your body. I know there's one going on in my body, but you'll never find out what the war is in mine, because I'm not going to tell you. And I'll never find out what it is in yours, because you're not going to tell me, are you? Yet, my Bible says, confess your faults one to another. Now, I don't mean that you ought to take me in the closet and tell me all the little things that you know about yourself that nobody but you and God know. That isn't what it means. Only if I can help you with it. But if I see a young girl that every boy she gets next to, before 5 minutes is over, she's feeling his leg, she's got a problem. I can help her with that problem. I can see that problem, can't I? And if I can help with that problem, I think it's well for me to let her recognize the problem, if she doesn't already, and she probably doesn't. In many cases they don't. Then I have done her a favor. If I see a young man that's challenging somebody else to a beer, he's got a problem, hasn't he? Not the one who's been challenged to drink with him, but the one who's doing the challenging has the problem. Can I help him with it? He's got a war going on, or he should have. Maybe he's already won it and gave in to beer. If he did, I feel for him, don't you? I want to help him. I see a war against the law of my mind. And whatever goes on in your body is a war against your mind, if it's wrong. Who says it's wrong? God says it's wrong, doesn't he? Society may not say it's wrong. With the use of contraceptives, we can do almost anything today that we please with one another's bodies. But let me tell you, just like the devil failed to tell Eve, you won't like the results. You may like the pleasure, but you won't like the results. So the waging a war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin at work within my members. In my mind, I'm a slave to God's law. But in the sinful nature, a slave to the law of sin. He's constantly asking me, come on back and work for me. I'll pay you a higher wage than the man you now have as your master. There is now, here's the ray of hope. There is now no more condemnations, 8:1, for those who are in Christ Jesus. Because through Christ Jesus, the law of the Spirit of life set me free from the law of sin and death. I can get away from it. I can't.